I just wanted to start with some staff changes in your office. Deputy Mayor John Weikart announced that he would not only not run for mayor, but decided it was just time to leave his position. Yeah. That came up kind of as a, did that come as a surprise?
Well, I think John was thinking about running, and then when you start to think about that, you start thinking about life decisions, and I know I've been doing that and thinking about whether you know, whether I wanted to run or not. So I think it just all was one big decision at the same time. We were really fortunate, Adam Wason, who has just been tremendous and kind of worked with the city since I've known him when he was an IU student of mine at SPIA years back. And he's worked his way up from being an intern at the city, working with utilities, working with then employer, now our human resources department, and then went to the economic sustainable development as a small business advocate for the city, and then moved up into our office as a communications director. So it was pretty much the natural progression, and he knows the system inside and out. So he and John have been working really closely together for the last year, and it was a great transition.
And I was going to ask, where will he pick up at?
I'm sorry.
What types of jobs or chores will he be kind of taking over?
Sure. Yeah. What John has really done is instituted a system, the whole financial financial oversight within the city, but also he's really established a kind of working relationship with every department head so that the deputy mayor truly became the head of day-to-day activities in running the city. Much more a traditional role of a deputy mayor that has not really been the case, at least in my administration. So Adam has already been a part of that. I mean, as a communications director, he worked with every department, so he already had all those connections there, and so it really is a natural fit for him to assume the duties that what John Weikart has made of the role.
It's been fun this month speaking to some of the mayors throughout Indiana about the new year. We already talked about some of your initiatives for this coming year, but the two big ones it seemed like were the Switchyard Park and the Certified Technology Park.
Right.
I was wondering if we could just kind of break those two things down
Sure.
just a little bit. January again, first of the year. Where are you on those big projects?
Absolutely, and those are the two big ones. It's a 12-acre parcel that we the city acquired from the university years back, and then a 65-acre parcel that what used to be the old Switchyard, a rail Switchyard at the southern end of the Beanline Trail, and we're developing both of those with different philosophies. The 12 acres eventually will be turned back to the private sector, I hope in its entirety. It could be piecemeal if we only have investors willing to assume small parts of that 12 acres at a time. The 65-acre parcel will be publicly owned in perpetuity, will be a community park. With the 12 acres, what we're doing now is negotiating with private investors for what they would like to do with that 12 acres. What IU had intended to do with that, for people who aren't sure where we're talking about, if you know where the old food services building was, IU printing services, those buildings have been removed, and now we want to turn that into an extension of downtown. Really an expansion of what you think of as our downtown will occur in that 12 acres. There is a certified technology park designation in that area, so we hope to see tech-related businesses, but also a better demographic balance in housing, that it won't just be more student housing, it won't just be more chain retail, chain restaurant, that will have an investor willing to step forward and build that out in a way that is done with a community vision. Now that could mean turning that land over at cost or even below cost to offset the loss that an investor will have by not being able to develop the property, for instance, as student apartments, higher income producing properties. But to me, it's worth the trade-off. If you think of the long-term vision for what we want our downtown to look like, it ought to be a priority for us to get that land in the hands of people who are going to develop it with our Bloomington vision and not just a vision of the bottom line for the investor. The 69-acre, so we're working currently with private investors on that front. And we hope that this year we'll have some announcements to make. Even without announcements of investors, we're going to start preparing the infrastructure. We've got an awful lot to do when it comes to water, sewer. We've got to straighten 10th Street. For anyone who knows that area, it's kind of got the strange curve there. We want to straighten 10th Street. We have technology-related infrastructure that needs to be put in. So we'll be working on drainage issues. We'll be working on infrastructure issues in 2015. But my hope is we'll have some announcements to make in terms of potential private investor, one investor or investors. The 69 acres, that a master plan has already been completed, and anyone who's interested can go to bloomington.in.gov/parks and look up, I think it's under Switchyard or Switchyard Park. That won't be the long-term name, but that's what the placeholder name is. And you can see the master plan, and it's an impressive plan, and it will truly be a community park. It's more than twice the acreage of Bryan Park, if you think of the scope of Bryan Park, and will have many more amenities than what Bryan Park has right now. In 2015, there are two things we hope to accomplish. One is to convert those that master plan into blueprints, to actually get designed plans for exactly how that park will be developed. The other, identify financing, and that's the real challenge. This will be, if it's completely built out the way the master plan envisions, a $34 million development. And you know, it won't be using traditional tax dollars, it won't be through the city budget, it'll be using TIF dollars, tax increment finance dollars to finance bonding. Now's a good time to be in that market, given the economy. And so we're hopeful that we can get approvals to move forward on the financing of the park. Even if that all goes to, according to our best estimates, it's about a four-year project. And without financing, if we don't finance it all at once, for instance, if we do it in phases, it could be 10, 12 years. So I know I won't be in office when we complete this park, but I hope to be in office when we complete the blueprints for it.
You mentioned TIF districts. I was talking with Greencastle Mayor and Terre Haute. They're looking at different legislation, historic, designating historic downtowns. Duke Bennett is looking for TIF for the Holman Center to turn that more into a convention center, right, too. Is there anything in the upcoming legislative session that Bloomington is kind of keeping an eye on?
Yeah, quite a few things. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at some tenant-landlord legislation that's been introduced. We're looking at a number of economic development-related issues, some of which we don't, so far doesn't look like it directly impacts us, but one, it is early. Two, as the process moves forward, amendments will always be offered, and then even when you get into April, the conference committees, that things just pop up. So we do have a legislative liaison up in Indianapolis, and they watch all that legislation for us. IACT, Indiana Association of Cities and Towns, monitors legislation. So we look at it from two perspectives. One, how it impacts all municipalities, but then secondly, how it impacts Bloomington, Indiana. And we have two sets of eyes looking at all of that. So absolutely. And TIF-related legislation has come up many times. Another one that comes up often that impacts actually WTIU are how the different monies that come in from cable franchise fees are distributed to communities. Financing of public transit could be impacted by legislation. So there are a lot of things. And one little change in legislation can mean hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars when it comes to local government.
How about the one you mentioned about the tenant landlord? What's that one about?
Well, there has been efforts in the past to erode tenant rights and doing that by pretty much dismantling the ability of local governments to be able to regulate rentals. And we, and I think West Lafayette and maybe one other community, were able to exempt ourselves, have our tenant landlord code, housing code, exempted, grandfathered in the legislation that passed in 2014, but there's been a bill introduced this year that we're watching to see if this might not be an effort to try to take away that exception.
How does the change of that legislation either help or hurt?
Well, if you're a tenant, you want to think that your property is being inspected regularly, that the monies from the inspection fees are being put into efforts to try to make your property safer, fire code, just the basic amenities and quality of life issues that impact your, you know, for those who went to law school, you know, it's kind of an implied warranty of habitability that your property has basic services. And I will tell you, there are places in the state where that's not the case. We don't have that level of problems in Bloomington, although there are, I will say, you know, bad problems, bad landlords are the exception to the rule. I mean, we have responsible people running our rental properties, but you always want to have that basic level of protection. And I've been really disappointed the Indiana Apartment Association has never failed to try to meet an opportunity to erode protections for tenants. And we're concerned about where this current legislation is headed to erode city government's ability to be able to inspect and to act on those inspections when we find deficiencies.
We've been reporting on road funding too. NDOT is asking for at least $100 million to fix the state's roads and bridges. Are there any big projects coming up this year in Bloomington?
Well, the kind of projects that we're going to see, I think there's a number of projects, but a lot of them are I-69 related projects. So the first thing you'll see for I-69 is Tap Road will be closed probably in March, and then all the detoured traffic will be hitting all, you know, Tap and Leonard Springs Road and West 2nd, and you're going to see a tremendous increase overnight in congestion on existing roads. Then going down the path, the next thing we're interested in are all of the bike ped amenities that have connectivity between east and west parts of town after I-69 is in. And NDOT's been great to work with on that issue with us. With the city government, they've been very helpful in making sure that sidewalk bike paths will be implemented at Tap, 2nd, 3rd. And so you'll start to see those being built as part of the expansion of the east-west connectors. So this construction that we're all thinking about on I-69 isn't just north-south, it's the impact east-west. The other huge one for us is Vernal Pike is going to be closed off. An overpass will be built instead of having an intersection there. And so you'll have no access, which means all of the west and east of that will have a huge increase in people using it to bypass, to get back and forth. So we already have built a roundabout, took away the old K intersection at Monroe and 17th, and now we're going to have to improve the condition of 17th as it goes west and toward Vernal Pike, and making sure that people can get to and from the west side of town into the other side of I-69. And big question is, who's going to pay for that? What's it going to look like? And again, you know, I would have preferred all those questions as to how much and who's going to pay for it have been answered before I-69 was approved, but it is what it is, so we'll make the most of it. And those are kind of plans that we'll have to work on in 2015.
We do have a question from a Matt Mullins, and he wanted to know if there's any way to speed up the Fullerton Pike east-west connector construction. He said he went to the meeting, land acquisition out to 2015, maybe construction in 2016. He lives in the area, and one of those that is ready to see it sooner than later.
And I assume he's discussing not so much just the I-69 component, but perhaps the county plan.
I think it's
for
more
Fullerton.
Of a county plan
yeah,
than
the
it
county.
Is a city.
So
yeah.
I'm going to dodge it by saying it's a county issue, but. You know, part of that issue is that all the neighbors who are very concerned about the impact of a Fullerton Pike expansion is the scope of that project. And some will argue the need, some will argue the scope, and you can argue it from both sides, whether you're for it or against it. But one thing that we're concerned about is eventually the city will be annexing in that part of town, and Fullerton very well could become part of the city. So while it's not a city government project at this point, it could become a city controlled road in part at some point in the future, in the very near future. So we do have a stake in it. And one thing we're working with the county and talking about is maybe that the scope of it doesn't need to be as sizable as being proposed. That perhaps instead of having a big divider running down the middle of that project, that we could collapse it so that we won't have to take as much land on either side of the construction project, and perhaps it wouldn't be as disruptive to all those landowners. But the speed of the project itself rests in the hands of the county government.
And Bloomington Hospital expecting to decide on a future site this year. I think we almost between the North Park or the current location. I mean, it's such a big part of Bloomington. How much are they in contact with the city?
Well, we just had a meeting last week,
did
in
you?
Fact,
okay.
And my belief is that, you know, you still refer to it, and I do, as the Bloomington Hospital. Of course, it's not been that now for a while, but we all do that. That's how much ownership we feel we have of that facility. It's how much history it has. And I believe the decision's been made. If you go back and look, I think in 2007 and 2008, I'm quoted in the newspaper saying, I believe the decision has been made to move out to the new land. You don't just go purchase 85 acres without a plan. So my belief is an announcement is imminent, that it will move, and then the question is, what do we do to reutilize that area? And I'm very disappointed in the decision, but I think that is their decision. When I look at the Monroe County Public Library, the U.S. Postal System, Bloomington Transit, MCCSC and deciding to keep Fairview downtown. All of these are public entities, nonprofit, that chose to keep an identity downtown when the lure of cheaper land for expansion purposes was there. But they all maintain their investment in downtown and in Bloomington. So it is disappointing to see the hospital make this move. That having been said, if the decision's been made to move, the good news is they're still going to be a major employer, still going to be in the community, albeit not the city limits, but they'll still be here. So that earning potential, all of the charitable dollars that comes, all the employment, you know, that will all still remain here. So it's analogous to a Thompson RCA decision to leave town with one huge exception. When Thompson RCA left, they left. And that was a big impact on those neighborhoods out there, on the land, and on the income of the community and the charitable dollars. Big hit on the United Way. Same with a GE, you know, Otis Elevator. All these departures have impacted us. So it's important to remember the hospital will still be here. But it's also to remember it's not, they still have an obligation to that property that they currently occupy. And I want to make sure that their accountability is pretty high, that they view their own accountability to the community as very high. I think they have a stake in the community as a corporate responsibility, but also the fact they're a nonprofit, and that's an obligation to taxpayers that I hope that they keep in mind as we have costs incurred with the impact on the property there. But we'll have to get into a reutilization mode very quickly, and it's doable. We have no choice other than to view it as an opportunity, and an opportunity to either expand neighborhoods or to grow that area with, again, an expanded downtown. So I don't want people to feel like this is the end of the world when it comes to that part of town. We'll quickly turn around and use a lot of tools we put in place. We put them in place hoping to encourage the hospital to stay in place. So we used economic development tools, expanded the TIF district. We've looked at making 1st and 2nd Street one-way pairs, again, hoping that the hospital would stay in place and we would have that access issue to I-69 solved. But those are tools that will be in place for whatever use comes in the future. So we've been positioning ourselves for this day, whether it be an expansion on site or a departure and something new coming into place. So we'll be ready.